Imagine raising $122 billion to build a superintelligence.
Right, which is just a staggering amount of money.
Yeah, exactly. And then, finding out your absolute best model scores a near zero on a basic reasoning test. So, welcome back to the deep dive.
It's definitely a wild time in the industry right now.
It really is. The date is April 1st, 2026, and today we are looking squarely at the massive, incredibly expensive duct tape facade of the modern tech industry.
Yeah, it's a remarkable moment to be watching this space, honestly. We have a stack of sources today from the latest edition of Atomic News.
Atomic News Tech and AI Daily, right?
Exactly. And when you look at all these sources together, a very specific, almost contradictory picture starts to emerge.
For sure. Our mission today is to really separate the mind-boggling financial hype of this AI gold rush from the gritty reality of how this technology actually functions.
Which is often a lot less glamorous than the press releases make it sound.
Exactly. Because looking at today's news, it feels exactly like walking through a Hollywood movie set.
Oh, I love that analogy.
Right. Like, if you are just standing on the street as a consumer, it looks like this flawless, multi-billion-dollar, futuristic metropolis.
Oh, absolutely flawless.
But then, if you walk around to the back and peek behind the facades, you realize the whole thing is held together by two-by-fours, incredibly clever engineering.
And a truly surprising amount of human psychology.
Yes, exactly. The psychology aspect is huge.
Because the facade is dazzling, yes, but the structural integrity behind it requires constant active maintenance. And the financial stakes for keeping that facade standing have really never been higher.
Okay, let's unpack this because we absolutely have to start with the sheer scale of the money involved right now.
We do. It's kind of hard to even wrap your head around.
It really is. According to the news today, OpenAI just closed a massive post-money valuation funding round. They announced $122 billion in committed capital.
Just wow.
I know. And the valuation is $852 billion.
Yeah.
We are literally knocking on the door of $1 trillion just to win what they're calling the AGI race. Right, $1 trillion. We are talking about GDP-level money being poured into a single corporate objective.
Yeah. And their official public statement on this round was, quote, "The fastest way to expand AI's benefits is to put useful intelligence in people's hands early."
And that specific phrase you mentioned, useful intelligence, that is doing a tremendous amount of heavy lifting in their PR strategy right now.
Right, and that's exactly where I have to push back because I read that quote and then, I look at the very next source in our stack from Atomic News, and the juxtaposition is almost comical.
It's pretty jarring,
It's
yeah.
like we just raised $122 billion to build a rocket to Mars, but our best engine currently has a 0.37% success rate at actually leaving the launch pad.
That is a very apt way to put it.
I mean, are we just confusing massive pattern memorization with actual genuine intelligence?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you are hitting on the fundamental friction point of the entire AI industry today.
Yeah.
The source you're referring to is the new ARC AGI-3 benchmark.
Right, the reasoning test.
Yeah, exactly. Now, for the last few years, we've watched AI models completely ace standardized tests.
Like the bar exams, medical boards, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, advanced coding exams, all of it.
Yeah.
But what researchers have rigorously proven now is that the models weren't actually reasoning their way through those problems.
Because they had already essentially ingested the entire internet during their training phase, right?
Precisely. They had practically memorized the answers, or at the very least, they had memorized the statistical patterns of how those answers are typically formulated.
So it wasn't really thinking.
No, not at all. The older benchmarks became completely saturated. They were no longer testing intelligence, they were testing recall.
Wow.
It's the difference between knowing that the answer to 2 + 2 = 4, because you've seen it written down a million times, versus actually understanding the mathematical concept of addition.
Oh, I see. It's like a student who memorizes the entire textbook word for word, but then completely freezes up when you ask them to apply the underlying concept to a brand new real-world problem.
Exactly that. So the ARC AGI-3 benchmark was specifically designed to strip away the advantage of having a massive memory.
Okay, how does it do that?
It tests genuine reasoning over pattern memorization. So it presents the AI with novel, abstract logic puzzles.
Like what kind of puzzles?
Often visual grids or spatial reasoning tasks that literally do not exist anywhere in its training data. To solve them, the AI has to deduce the underlying rule from scratch and then apply it.
And how did they do?
Well, on this new, rigorous standard, the absolute best, state-of-the-art frontier models are scoring a dismal 0.37%.
That is just wild. It's near zero.
It is basically a rounding error away from completely failing.
Yeah, that is a profound reality check.
What that 0.37% proves is that genuine reasoning is a fundamentally different mountain to climb than mere data processing.
Right.
You can throw $122 billion at scaling up your data centers and buying more compute, but simply scaling up a system that predicts the next most likely word in a sentence,
it doesn't magically create reasoning.
Exactly. It does not automatically buy you the ability to perform abstract reasoning.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because if you are listening to this, you've probably used one of these frontier models recently.
Almost certainly, yeah.
And if they score a 0.37% on actual reasoning, how on earth do they manage to feel so incredibly smart when we talk to them?
The illusion of intelligence is incredibly potent.
It really is. And that brings us to the Claude Code source map leak on NPM that broke today.
Oh, man. This was a fascinating, albeit likely very stressful, morning for Anthropic's engineering team.
Oh, to say the least. I mean, for context, we usually only see the compiled, sanitized output of these AI tools.
The polished version.
Right. Getting a raw source map leak on a public package manager like NPM is basically like finding the director's cut of a movie with all the embarrassing outtakes and internal notes left in.
It's a gold mine.
It shows us exactly how the software is structured before it's hidden from the public. And what they found wasn't just algorithms doing math. It was basically a masterclass in behavioral engineering.
It truly was the Wizard of Oz, pulling the levers behind the curtain.
Exactly.
What's fascinating here is the leak exposed the internal mechanics of how Anthropic engineers their human-AI interaction.
And what it revealed is that they are actively masking the reasoning limitations of the AI with highly sophisticated social engineering.
Yes. The specifics are wild.
Tell me about it. The leak showed they are using things called fake shell tools to prevent user confusion.
Fake shell tools.
Yeah. And they literally built internal rejects patterns specifically designed to detect user frustration in the prompt.
Which is just brilliant, honestly.
Instead of making the AI smarter, it's like they built a casino that pumps in extra oxygen to keep you at the table.
That's exactly what it is.
Right. It's an invisible environmental tweak designed entirely to manage your emotional state when the AI inevitably makes a mistake.
That is a brilliant way to look at it.
Yeah.
The engineers, they know exactly what that 0.37% reasoning score means in practice.
Right. They know the AI is going to mess up.
They know it's going to make frustrating, illogical errors during complex tasks. So they program the system to monitor your text for signs of annoyance.
Like what? Swearing.
Or maybe you just use all caps or your sentences get shorter and more direct.
Oh, wow.
If the system detects that frustration, it triggers a behavioral pivot.
A pivot.
Yeah. The AI might suddenly shift its tone, become highly apologetic, or deliberately change its troubleshooting strategy just to de-escalate the situation and keep you engaged.
Like a frantic customer service rep reading your body language to calm you down before you ask for a manager?
Precisely. And then there's the most talked about part of the leak, which is an actual undercover mode meant to actively hide its AI nature from the user.
Okay, but I have to push back here. A lot of the commentary today is calling this deceptive. But is it really deceptive or is it just good UX?
That's the big debate right now.
Because look, if I'm using an AI to help me code or write an email, I want it to act like a helpful conversational assistant.
You want it to be polite.
Right. I don't want a cold, robotic terminal that just spits out error codes. Isn't Anthropic just giving people what they actually want?
It's a fair point.
Yeah.
And there's certainly an argument that this reduces friction for the average user, but it crosses a fascinating line.
How so?
Well, think about those fake shell tools you mentioned. The AI doesn't actually need a visual command line interface to execute code.
Oh, because it doesn't type like we do.
Exactly. It doesn't need a screen. But humans expect a computer to work a certain way.
Okay.
If the AI operates in a manner that is entirely alien to human expectations, the human gets spooked and rejects the tool.
I see.
So the developers build a literal facade, a fake terminal, to make the human feel like the AI is doing normal computer things.
So it's performing for us. It's acting out a little digital play to make us feel comfortable.
Exactly. But to address your pushback, if the product is genuinely an advanced, useful intelligence, like the trillion-dollar valuations claim,
right,
why does it have to pretend to be something it's not?
That is a very good question.
The undercover mode isn't just about being friendly. It's about obscuring the seams.
Yeah.
It is a psychological band-aid, designed to cover up the fact that the machine still fundamentally lacks the reasoning capabilities to understand why you are frustrated.
So it relies on a hard-coded script to calm you down instead.
Exactly.
Which perfectly explains this weird trend we're seeing on the development side of the news today.
Oh, definitely.
Because if Anthropic is spending this much energy hard-coding human social behaviors, it tells us the AI fundamentally can't navigate the complex real world on its own yet.
No, it needs massive amounts of hand-holding.
And looking at the tools released today, the developer community is scrambling to build that exact scaffolding.
Yes, we are seeing a massive surge in infrastructure designed specifically to accommodate the limitations of these models.
Right. Like today, Google just released a Chrome DevTools MCP server specifically for browser automation.
Explicitly targeting agent workflows, yeah.
And then there's a new project called Ministack, which is stepping up as a cleaner local stack replacement for AWS emulation, and it has better Docker support.
Let's break down the mechanics of those releases because they represent two very different but equally crucial types of scaffolding.
Okay, let's do it.
The Google MCP release, MCP stands for Model Context Protocol, is essentially about giving the AI functional hands.
Because historically, an AI looking at a web page is just looking at a flat image, right? It doesn't inherently know how a website actually works under the hood.
Exactly. If you tell an AI agent to book a flight, it can't just magically reach into your browser.
The internet is built for human eyes and human mouse clicks.
Right. What this new Chrome DevTools MCP server does is act like a universal plug adapter.
Oh, I like that.
It exposes the underlying structure of the website, you know, the DOM, the actual code of the buttons and forms, in a highly structured way that the AI can securely read and interact with.
So it doesn't get confused.
Right. It allows developers to build agents that can navigate the web without getting instantly derailed by a pop-up ad or a dynamic menu.
That makes total sense. And then you have Ministack, which is essentially about giving the AI a padded room to practice in.
A padded room is the perfect way to describe it.
Because if you're listening to this and wondering why a developer doesn't just let their new AI agent practice its coding skills on their actual live Amazon Cloud account.
Please don't do that.
Yeah, remember that these models still hallucinate. One bad hallucination, one failure in reasoning, and the AI agent accidentally deletes your company's live production database.
Which has happened repeatedly.
Exactly. So Ministack is blowing up because it allows developers to emulate that entire complex cloud environment locally on their own laptop.
Right. It's a highly controlled, simulated playpen.
The AI can practice deploying code, make a catastrophic logical error, quote unquote, destroy the server, and all you have to do is restart the simulation.
Nothing in the real world actually breaks.
But the irony of the situation is what truly stands out.
Oh, it is so incredibly ironic.
On one side of the industry, we have Google and massive open source communities building these incredibly specialized automated playpens and universal adapters for AI agents to operate in.
Millions of dollars of engineering.
Right. But on the human side, humans are struggling so much to communicate with these AIs that the absolute hottest repository on GitHub today.
Yeah, with what, 2,390 stars in a matter of hours?
Yes. And it's something called Claude How-To.
Right.
And it's not some advanced algorithmic framework. It is literally just a visual, example-driven markdown guide full of copy-paste templates for Claude code.
It perfectly captures the awkward, deeply human transition phase we are stuck in right now.
It really does.
We are aggressively shifting toward agent-friendly infrastructure, essentially building an entire secondary internet where machines can safely talk to machines.
Meanwhile, humans are still fumbling to learn the basic language of prompting.
Yes.
We are literally relying on basic copy-paste cheat sheets to talk to an AI that is simultaneously using an engineered undercover mode to talk to us.
It's absurd when you think about it.
It's like we are both trying to learn each other's language, but we are both using terrible, outdated translation dictionaries.
That's the perfect analogy. The AI doesn't genuinely understand human reasoning, as the 0.37% benchmark proved.
Right.
And humans don't naturally know how to syntactically structure an instruction to force the AI to yield the correct statistical output.
So we end up with this crutch.
Exactly. The Claude How-To repository is wildly popular because it radically reduces the cognitive load on the human user.
People just want it to work.
Right. It's the developer community throwing up their hands and saying, look, don't try to reason with the machine. Just paste this exact pre-tested string of words to get the result you want.
Which naturally leads us to the final and perhaps the most impactful part of today's deep dive.
the real-world consequences.
Exactly. What happens when this massive wave of funding, these near-zero reasoning scores, these undercover UX tricks, and these copy-paste cheat sheets all crash into the real world?
It gets messy.
Very messy. Specifically, what happens when this hits the high-stakes world of professional research and academia?
The academic community is currently serving as the canary in the coal mine for exactly how disruptive this technology is to established human systems.
So what does this all mean in practice? Let's look at this new policy study out of ICML 2026.
ICML, of course, being one of the premier machine learning conferences.
Right. And they ran a survey with 100 expert reviewers looking at submitted research papers.
And the results were super interesting.
They found something wild. The papers that were written with heavy LLM assistance, what they designated as Policy B papers, actually scored consistently higher on objective quality metrics.
They were better written.
Way better. They are better structure, the grammar was flawless, the citations were impeccably formatted.
Look.
But those same peer reviewers reported having significantly lower confidence in the scientific merit of those exact same papers.
It is a fascinating paradox that strikes at the heart of how we evaluate human merit.
It really does.
The AI helps the researcher produce an objectively better, more polished document. But the presence of the AI actively degrades the reviewer's trust in the author.
It's exactly like using a highly advanced calculator on a high school math test.
Oh, good point.
The answer is completely correct. The paper is flawless. But the teacher looks at it and refuses to believe that you actually understand the underlying mathematical formula.
Yes.
The tool is too good, so the human gets zero credit.
This raises an important question about how we navigate truth in an AI-saturated ecosystem.
Right.
When those reviewers in the ICML study express low confidence, they aren't necessarily doubting the raw facts printed on the page.
They're doubting the person.
They're doubting the origin of the insight. In traditional academia, the struggle of synthesizing complex information is proof of the author's deep understanding.
Because it's hard work.
Exactly. But if an LLM is doing the heavy lifting of synthesis, the reviewer questions whether the human author actually grasps the depth of the research or if they just engineered a really good prompt and copy-pasted the output.
So the friction has entirely shifted.
Right. It isn't about the quality of the work anymore. It's about the authenticity of the intelligence behind it.
And authenticity is becoming mathematically impossible to prove.
It really is.
Look at the other academic drama in today's news, the TurboQuant dispute happening right now on OpenReview.
Oh, that situation's a perfect example.
We have authors who are actively having to defend their reputations against severe plagiarism claims. And their core defense is essentially, we didn't steal this idea. We just used standard AI techniques, and there are timing disputes.
This is where the sheer speed of AI generation breaks our traditional frameworks.
Right, because when an AI can synthesize a data set and generate a fully formatted 20-page research paper in 3 minutes, the timeline of who came up with an idea first gets incredibly murky.
Almost impossible to track.
If I generate a paper at 2:00 p.m. and you generate the exact same paper at 2:05 p.m. using the same open source data set and the same frontier model, whose idea is it?
Exactly. When you combine the blistering speed of synthetic generation with the undercover modes we discussed earlier, the lines of originality completely blur.
Yeah.
The AI is designed to mimic authoritative human voices. So if two different researchers use similar AI tools to analyze the same data set, the AI might generate remarkably similar text.
More similar hypotheses.
Or even identical code blocks for both of them.
Which looks exactly like cheating.
Right. Is that plagiarism? Or is that just the unavoidable reality of using the exact same automated assistant?
It completely breaks the system.
It does. The TurboQuant dispute highlights how painfully ill-equipped our current systems of peer review, intellectual property, and academic integrity are to handle this.
We are trying to apply rigid 20th century rules of human authorship to a 21st century reality of rapid synthetic generation.
And it's not working.
No, and it all comes right back to that fundamental trust deficit. We are building these massive systems backed by hundreds of billions of dollars, but we haven't actually figured out how to trust the output they generate.
Okay. Or even how to trust each other when we use them.
Exactly. So to wrap all of this up for you listening today, we've really explored an incredible duality in this deep dive.
A huge contradiction, yeah.
On one hand, you have an industry fueled by an $852 billion valuation, throwing around $122 billion war chests, and publicly promising to hand useful intelligence to humanity.
The glossy facade.
Right. But on the other hand, you have the mechanical reality. Frontier AI models that score a 0.37% on tests of true abstract reasoning.
The duct tape holding it together.
Yep. And to bridge that massive gap, companies are engineering fake terminal interfaces, undercover modes, and frustration detectors to keep us emotionally engaged.
Meanwhile, developers scramble to build safe playpens for the agents and copy-paste cheat sheets for the humans.
Knowing this gives you a massive advantage. The next time you interact with this tech, you aren't just a passive user. You understand that you are participating in a highly engineered, deeply psychological interaction. You can look at the Hollywood movie set, appreciate the dazzling facade, but know exactly where the duct tape is hidden.
The facade is undeniably impressive, but understanding the intricate mechanics behind it is what actually empowers you.
For sure.
And looking at the sources today leaves us with one critical, somewhat unsettling thought to consider moving forward.
What's that?
If major tech companies are now actively programming their AIs to analyze our text, detect our emotional frustration, and automatically go undercover to hide their artificial nature just to keep us comfortable.
Yeah.
At what point does our daily interaction with technology become entirely performative?
Wow, yeah.
If the AI is actively pretending to be human just to appease us, will we eventually have to develop our own undercover modes just to cut through the empathy and get a straight, unmanipulated answer out of our machines?